Blog Talk Radio.
It's 3 p.m., and I have a question for you. Do you know where your politicians are? Everything is political in your life, from the moment you're born to the moment you die. And when a politician tells you that's not true, look in your pocket. You'll find their hand in it. Everything is political. We will be talking to those politicians that are working for you and talking about those politicians that are working against you. Just because they're a Democrat, or just because they're a Republican, and you voted that way your entire life, maybe you were wrong. Because everybody is not what they seem to be. However, there are a few out there who are working for your benefit, and we are going to bring them to you. We're going to let you hear them. We're going to ask them questions. We're going to let you ask them questions. And we're going to be discussing education system, the military, science, music, sports, oh, and healthcare. Do you have it? Do you need it? Are your 26-year-olds still on the family health care plan? Or, as the regressive party says, Obamacare. We will bring you what you need to know, because this is the last word. And everything, from the cities, counties, state, nation, the entire world. So sit down and get a pencil, paper, and take this graduate education experience. And we will make sure that you have the last word. My name is Michael Lawson.
We can fight.
Of course you didn't hear me, because I wasn't tuned in. I mean, how the heck are you going to hear me when I don't even have the daggone microphone on? I mean, I'm talking for like how long? Maybe 3 minutes already. And people say, what the hell's wrong? Can't hear nothing. We heard a fistful of dollars. Now we don't hear nothing. Well, hey, this is Michael Lawson, and this is The Last Word. It's April the 15th, 2022. Did you get your mail, tax stuff in the mail? Did you get your tax stuff in the mail? I think we have another day because it's a holiday. I think we have some Monday. But I got mine in. My lawyer says, my accountant says, it won't be for 4 months before I get anything back because he's so full. I didn't say full of shit. I just say he's full. I've been working with him for 35 years, maybe 40 years. Probably 40 years. Over 40 years. So, anyway, he's a great, great accountant. Anybody want a great accountant? Call me, text me, email me. I'll give you his name. They grown. So, I mean, he has a big outfit over there now in New York City. But he takes care of me. He makes sure that I don't screw up anything because I've been known to do. Anyway, I was up to 5 o'clock this morning because every single time I get ready to do the show, I have stuff laid down and it's out the freaking window. It's out the window. Every single time I want to do something, it goes out the window. Now, why do you think that is? It's because that we live in this world. We live in this world, and we got Looney Tunes out there. We got Looney Tunes out there like Donald J. Trump, Putin. There are a bunch of people out there. And they just don't know what the hell to do. They have no idea what to do. And we're in the midst of a major problem here with this clown Putin. And we have a problem. I'm trying to figure it out right now. Oh, yeah, my other problem is I can't get my email up. So... You see, I trick them. I'll do my email by my cell phone. How about them apples? I thought I could do that. Anyway, I'm trying to do this right now. But anyway, ladies and gentlemen, I am glad to be here. We're going to have a great guest on today who's running for county commissioner. Arthur Griffin, who I've known for since the world began here in Charlotte. But anyway, let me see if I get out of this here. Yeah, he's going to be on because he's running for county commission. And come on, let me get a new tab here. He's running for county commission. And he's going to be a great, great asset to us in Mecklenburg County. Now, I had so much I wanted to do. I laid out the plans every single time I do that. I should not go on loud enough to stay up 5 o'clock in the morning and not plan nothing, and just come on to you, hey, we're coming on fresh. Maybe I'll do that. You know, I've never done that. I don't know, for sure, 14 years, I've never done that. You people, you want to call in the show, I'll make a call-in show. I won't plan anything. How about that? It'd be a call-in show. And I've never done that before. Because a lot of people out there call in, and they're stupid. They don't ask anything pertinent. You know what? I have my dog got locked out of my house last week, and Donald Trump is the greatest president since bread. You know, stupid things like that. And I just can't understand myself entertaining anything like that. But, you know, let me think about it. And I'll send out an email this week that I'm going to do a freelance show where it's only going to be questions. Of course, I'll have to plan a little bit of something in the beginning here because we got to keep up with Mr. Michael Cohen, as a matter of fact. Well, Michael Cohen has a great thing this week that we need to, if I can get there. I don't know if I can get there, but we're going to see. Michael Cohen and he's going to talk about that guy. Who's the guy in the wheelchair, the congressman, the Republican, the young guy? I believe he was in a car accident. I forgot his name. But anyway, Michael Cohen's going to be talking about that. And we're going to play that in a few minutes as soon as I get up. Okay, that's the wrong one. I don't need that. How come? Where is Michael Cohen at? How come I didn't get that up there? How come that didn't come up? Okay, let's see. I have no idea why it didn't come up. I just played him. And that should come up. Why didn't that come up, ladies and gentlemen? Why didn't my studio come up here? I mean, with Cohen. Come on. Come on. There we are. Let's see here. Michael Cohen, where is he? Okay. What is all this? Thanks now. I get a lot of stuff on my studio here. Okay. So why hasn't this gone over? You're telling me I never uploaded Michael Cohen? Well, all right, then we'll have to play him for next week. I did load. You know, they're talking about this daggone ship that was sunk, in the Black Sea. Yeah, now, this all goes back, probably you people, you need to get out a map, because you need to know, this is a lesson. When we come on here, we try to give you information that you may not have known of, may not know of. The Black Sea, where is the Black Sea? The Black Sea is over in Europe, okay? Now, you know the country called Finland? Yes, there's a country called Finland, ladies and gentlemen. And there's also a country called Russia. You know that country. That's Donald Trump's next, that's where he keeps all his guests when he goes overseas. You know that? That's right. That's where he keeps all his guests. He's welcome there. The man who's in charge over there, who steals from all the people. He loves it. He loves when Uncle D comes over. And Uncle D comes over and brings him a lot of bullshit, and they accept it. Anyway, back in 1939, before World War II, Russia invaded Finland. And it was known as the Winter War. That's 1939. When they invaded Finland, a huge country, over 100 million people, invaded a small country, less than 3 million people. I mean, what reason would they have to do this? What reason? Oh, by the way, I should say, well, I say before World War II. Well, it's just when World War II started. when Hitler started getting his ants in his pants. But guess what? It ended in 3.5 months. And not because, remember, not because that $100 million people that they had in the Russian, in the Soviet Union at the time, defeated Finland. They made a peace treaty with Finland. It was called the Moscow Peace Treaty, March 13, 1940. And despite period military strengths, tanks, aircraft, everything, the Soviet Union lost severely. And the League of Nations deemed that the attack was illegal and expelled the Soviet Union from the organization. So what we're doing now, what Biden is doing now, has been done before to the Soviet Union. The Finnish people, soldiers, they kicked the hell out of the Russians. The treaty was signed. They got, I think it was about 9% of what they wanted. The Russians lost severely. The Russians lost severely. Finland had between 300,000 to about 350,000 troops. The Russians had between 4.25 to 800,000 troops. Now, of course, people ringing my bell right now. But I want to talk about this a little bit later, as soon as I can get these people who are ringing my bell. I don't know who it is. Everyone's talking about it. But this is something that we need to hear. Just listen.
A new setback for Vladimir Putin as Ukrainian officials say they've destroyed Russia's flagship in the Black Sea. And the news is coming in that the Russian warship sank after an explosion. The file video shows what it looked like, this warship. The Ukrainians say they were able to hit it with missiles and force the crew to abandon ship. Now, that would be the first time a Russian ship was hit at sea in this conflict. The Russians say it was actually an accidental fire. Experts tell NBC this is a blow to Putin's and Russia's credibility.
It was just about this time last night here on the show when we started to get more credible but still unconfirmed reports about this ship, reports that the Russians' most important naval vessel in the war against Ukraine had been hit or damaged somehow and might be out of commission. Well, today, that ship, the Moskva, which is the Russian for Moscow, that ship sank. Over the course of the last few days, while this has been covered, you've probably heard the Moskva described as the flagship of Russia's fleet in the Black Sea. Being the flagship means it's the most important, usually the most capable, highest profile ship in any fleet. In this case, the Moskva was gigantic. I mean, if the Ukrainians' claims that they sunk it with a land-to-sea missile are correct, the Moskva might be the largest ship ever sunk by a missile. It's certainly the largest warship of any kind sunk since World War II. This is a guided missile cruiser. It's got a crew of about 500. It's more than 600 feet long, and it's now gone. The Russian Ministry of Defense is now confirming that it has sunk. We're going to have some expert help here in just a minute to try to get to the practical significance of that development.
Here we are, day 51, and what happened? The loss of that Russian warship. General, how much of a military setback is that? Is it really just symbolic and a huge emotional or morale-boosting win for Ukrainians, or is it serious business in terms of the loss?
Well, I think it's also a huge boost to Ukrainian morale. And by the way, I have no doubt in my own mind, having followed this over the last 24 hours, Ukrainians sunk the ship with two Neptune missiles at a deception operation. It was a very clever, aggressive move. So, and there's also unconfirmed rumors that much of that that the ship's party were lost at sea. So we need to listen to it in the coming days. But look, that was the flagship that was not only pounding Ukrainian civilians with cruise missiles for 1,000 miles inland, it was also part of the air defense protection of 21 Russian combatant and amphib ships. That's how the logistics is getting in to support the Russian army fighting in Mariupol. So this is a big hole just got knocked in their capability. The rest of the fleet has now withdrawn 80 miles away from the coast. So this is a real military setback to the Russian, to Putin's forces.
NBC's Molly Hunter recently talked to a Ukrainian about Russia's Navy efforts to take the city of Odessa. We have seen video for days of those ships sort of trolling the shoreline back and forth. And the Ukrainian she spoke to was simply not having it. Watch this.
We will kill them, drown them, he says. They have no options.
So you don't think they can take Odessa?
We will sink them, and it will be fish feeding season, he says, and our fish will grow fat.
Our fish will grow fat. Ambassador, how big of a win is this for Ukrainian morale?
Stephanie, I heard first thing this morning from two of my friends in Ukraine, and they were both ecstatic. Both were military. One was former defense minister. The other's in the military right now. They knew exactly what was going on. General Recovery is exactly right. They knew it was their own Neptune that they created, they manufactured. They were so proud. They were so high. They knew the big problems coming. And one of my friends is on the line out in Izum. So they are aware of this big battle that's coming, but this was an enormous boost for them this morning.
Gary, how concerned are you that this is so humiliating for Putin? He will truly seek revenge. He could bomb Ukraine's railways. He could do some really twisted stuff. He does not like being humiliated.
Oh, it's humiliation, and he'll try to do his best. But again, he lost his flagship. And as General just pointed out, Russian warships have been used as the prime source of firing missiles to Ukraine. They actually caused much more damage than Russian bombers that had to fly too high because just on low altitude, they were vulnerable for technology that was supplied to Ukraine by Americans and European allies. But also, I think it's not just a boost for Ukrainian. I think it sends panic to Russian sailors, to Russian troops, because the fact is that the Russian flagship was hit by two, let's be honest, by old-fashioned missiles. So, and yes, clever deception operation, I heard it, but it's clearly a sign of negligence. They were so confident that they were out of any danger. They were shelling Ukrainian cities, and they thought, okay, how Ukrainians could even shoot at us. And I think it may have serious consequences for the morale of Russian fleet, Russian Navy. And without the strategic advantage of that Russian Navy offered to Putin's armies, I think they will soon find themselves in great, great trouble.
General, let's look ahead. We've been talking about what's coming next, what the Russians are preparing for. What are you watching for as we're heading into this next phase of war?
Well, can the Ukrainian generals, who have been extremely good in their tactical leadership, and the sergeants, they created an NCO corps, can they deal with armored warfare, a war of fire and maneuver? We're now finally getting longer distance weapons in there to them, self-propelled 155 artillery weapons. But the Ukrainians have been doing hybrid warfare. They've been using extremely good special operations force, guerrilla units, but it's been urban defense. Now they got a war of maneuver against the Russians, who have masses of armor. I am encouraged, however, though, the Ukrainians have called up 200,000 territorial forces. We're now rushing to arm them with body armor, small arms, anti-tank missiles. The ratio of forces is actually 1-on-1 now. The only place the Russians have a serious advantage is a fivefold advantage in air power. So the battle is about to be joined in the coming 30 to 90 days. The existence of the Ukrainian army is the vital outcome. Can they defeat the Russians and still be a force in being?
Gentlemen, before we go, Gary, I want to ask you about Putin opponent Vladimir Kara-Murza. He is now under arrest. Do you have any update? Do you know anything about his situation?
No, nothing I can add to what you already know. The only question remains unanswered is whether this arrest for 15 days in prison was last warning, basically telling him get out of the country, or he will not see daylight out of the prison because they'll come up in 15 days with a criminal charge against him. I hope for the former, but you never know.
The Russian Navy's flagship, the most fearsome piece of floating military equipment in Vladimir Putin's war against Ukraine, has now sunk. This is the ship that famously threatened the Ukrainian border guard officers on Snake Island as the ship approached Ukraine in the first day of the war. That confrontation has been commemorated now in a new postage stamp in Ukraine with a raised Ukrainian middle finger aimed toward that ship. This could be the most important sinking of a warship since Germany's most fearsome warship, the Bismarck, was sunk by the British in 1941, and a crucial turning point in the battle for control of the North Atlantic. Russia's Ministry of Defense confirmed the sinking today in a statement saying that a fire on the ship was, quote, caused by the detonation of ammunition. Ukraine says it hit the warship with two Neptune missiles. Today, the Pentagon said it could not confirm exactly what sunk that ship that was named after Russia's capital city. A senior defense official told NBC News that all of the Russian ships in the Black Sea have now moved farther offshore from where they were operating. After British Prime Minister Boris Johnson's visit to Kyiv last weekend, President Biden said he's thinking about it. For his New York Times column, Thomas Friedman asked our next guest, military expert John Arquilla, what he would tell Vladimir Putin. The answer was, I would say, make peace, you fool. That was a deliberate echo about what a German general phoned from Normandy to the commanders in Berlin after the successful D-Day landings of American and British troops. When the general phoned in the devastating news to Berlin and was asked, what shall we do? He famously replied, make peace, you fools. What else can you do? Joining us now is John Arquilla, military strategy expert and former professor at the U.S. Naval Postgraduate School. He is the author of Blitzkrieg, The New Challenge of Cyber Warfare. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. In Tom Friedman's piece and in your book, you mentioned the three new rules of war. What are they, and how are we seeing them in Ukraine?
Well, the first rule is that many and small beats few and large. The Ukrainians are operating in very small squads, and the Russians are operating in 40-mile-long convoys. It makes them quite vulnerable. The second rule of war is finding beats flanking. This is no longer mass on mass and turning a flank. This is now about being able to locate where forces are. And in this wired world, the Ukrainians are able to get a great deal of information about Russian positions just from people calling in on smartphones or looking down from Google Maps. It's truly the first war of this sort in which finding is the key. And the third new rule of war is that swarming beats surging. You don't need masses of forces if you have small teams armed with smart weapons that can strike from many directions simultaneously, as the Ukrainians have been doing against these long columns of Russian tanks and armored personnel carriers. And what we're seeing is really the next phase of battle as being portrayed by the Ukrainian resistance.
When I was thinking about the sinking of the Bismarck today, it was just one ship, but it was a very important ship, very important German ship. And there seemed to be, in addition to the military value of sinking that ship, at the time, It's before my time, of course. This is just from my reading of history. There seemed to be a tremendous morale, value, and sense of momentum for the Allies in the sinking of the Bismarck. It was very important to Winston Churchill, just that one ship. Is that part of what we're seeing in the sinking of this Russian ship?
Oh, absolutely. When the Bismarck was sunk, the Germans became very much more cautious about the use of their other surface warships, just as the Russians are going to become much more cautious now. And I tend to believe the Ukrainian account of what happened. It includes a lot of information about how they were using drones to distract the air defenses of the ship. If just one or two missiles were shot at the ship, it's designed to defend against that. And so it does look like they were using these some of these smart drones they have to distract the air defense and then allow the missiles to go through and hit the vessel. Whatever happened, in fact, the real matter is that the Russian use of sea power is going to become very much more circumspect. The fact that they're moving away from the coast suggests they have a fear of these missiles, too.
The strategy for Russia in eastern Ukraine seems to just be to reduce everything to rubble. And then what is it, if they do that, what is it that Russians take over when they march into that rubble?
Well, they end up with an empire of rubble if that's the way they want to do it. I think we do have to be careful in this next phase. The Russians always learn from adversity. They learned from it in the Winter War against the Finns back in 1939 and 1940. And they learned about it in Chechnya, where they were defeated the first time there and came back smarter. They're going to be smarter now. And the fact there's so many more armored personnel carriers suggests they're going to have a lot more infantry this time. And I think Ukrainians have to be careful about asking for heavier weapons, tanks, and 155-millimeter artillery. The heavier they get, the more vulnerable they will be to the Russians, the less mobile they'll be. I think they should stick with the things that have been working for them.
Now, I had to switch off. What you just heard is supposed to come after what I'm going to tell you now. But it was FedEx here. I had to answer that bell. I had a sign for something that was being delivered. So, anyway, there's the story. I played that to say this. The Russians have screwed up so bad. Screwed up so bad that we cannot just think what this Putin will do. Because as I was saying with the Winter War 1939, going against Finland. Stalin invaded Finland in 1939. It was called the Winter War. It only lasted 3 months, 3.5 months. Now, just get a load of these statistics here. Finland had 300,000 to 400,000 troops. The Russians had between 425,000 and 760,000 troops. Finland had 32 tanks. The Russians had between 2,500 and 6,500 tanks. Finland had 114 aircraft. The Russians had 3,800 aircraft. Casualties, 25,000 or more were dead or missing. The Russians had between 126,000 and 167,000. Dead or missing. The Finnish had between 43,000 wounded. The Russians had between 188,000 to 207,000 wounded. they captured 20 to 30 tanks, 62 aircraft, one armed icebreaker to damage. It's just, and it goes on. Let's see what else I just read off this here. A total of 770,000 total casualties for Finland, 325 to 381,000 total casualties on the Russian side. The Soviets made several demands, including Finland succeed substantial border territories in exchange for land elsewhere, claiming security reasons primary to protection of Leningrad, which is on the Finnish border. When Finland refused, the Soviets invaded. This is the reason why they invaded. That's bullshit. Most sources conclude that the Soviet Union had intended to conquer all of Finland and use the establishment of a puppet Finnish communist government. And other people argue against the idea of a full Soviet Congress. Finland repelled Soviet attacks for more than 2 months and inflicted substantial losses on the invaders, while temperature was low as minus 43 degrees to minus 45 degrees centigrade. After the Soviets military reorganized and adopted different tactics, they renewed their offense in February and overcame Finnish defenses. Hostilities ceased in March of 1940 with the signing of the Moscow Peace Treaty, which Finland ceded 9% of its territory to the Soviet Union. Soviet losses were heavy, and the country's international reputation suffered. Their gains exceeded their pre-war demands, and the Soviet received substantial territory along the Lake Ladoga and further north. Finland retained its sovereignty and enhanced its international reputation. The poor performance of the Red Army encouraged the German Chancellor Adolf Hitler to believe that an attack on the Soviet Union would be successful and confirmed negative Western opinions of the Soviet Union. After 15 months of interim peace in 1941, Germany commenced Operation Barbarossa and the continuation war between Finland and the Soviet Union began again. So the Soviet Union, by the loss of this ship, sinking in the Black Sea, they have a reputation that they will not get back. Their reputation will not get back. They will not be able to get their reputation back because they have now, do you think that they want to cause the war with the EU and NATO now? Because all this stuff is going to start to come out that I'm reading to you right now. They're going to start talking about that. They're going to talk about this, the loss of the Moscow cruiser. They're going to talk about that. And the problem is, when they start talking about this, Russia has now talked about, say, yeah, we got a fire. Somebody must have been smoking and caused fire. That's bullshit. But here's the problem. How the hell did that cruiser get blown up? That's the flagship of the Russian Navy. And it took two hits. And they claimed that the thing, oh, we lost control, we were towing it back, and it was bad, roughy seas, and they get, that ocean, that's a sea. Yeah, you have rough things too, but what happened probably was that the ammunition did ignite and explode and capsized the damn ship. I mean, it's just completely outrageous. The Moskva, which is really Moscow, what I mean, this was protected. It has three, I believe it's what they call a three surveillance system, where the last surveillance system is that the ship will be covered. It'll be covered by fire from the ship that can shoot over 5,000 rounds a minute. So anything that was coming in on the off the surface or above the surface, this could take it out. There is no reason. Now, they're claiming now that maybe that it was under program where it was being worked on, and that the ship's defenses were down. Well, how the hell do you send a daggone, your flagship, out to a daggone war, and your systems are being tested? They're down for maintenance. How is that possible? This naval ship was designed to survive, I mean, massive attack. I mean, they have doors that will vent the ship from sinking, but you know, after you get so much water, I guess it doesn't take so long. But the thing is that it has defense system and the S-300 and anti-ballistic missiles on it. And I need to look for this thing here, which said it fires over 3,000 rounds a minute. The loss, though. How are they going to claim this? That it caught fire. Somebody smoking? How does a ship that's in a war zone, sink itself? Now, this is what we know so far. Ukrainian forces reportedly attacked the flagship of the Russian Black Sea Fleet, the Slava-class cruiser Moskva, causing significant damage aboard the vessel. Russian news agency confirmed damage, but they have not admitted so far how it happened. The updated state media confirms that the Moskva did sink while being towed. Right. The Ukrainian forces had attacked the Russian cruiser Moskva and caused severe damage aboard the ship. In the beginning, people were skeptical of this assertion because of the similarity, but unverified previous claims about the Russian Navy ship hit by Ukrainian fire. Patrol cruisers Vasily Baska and the frigate Admiral Ensign were rumored to be damaged, but such rumors turned out to be not true. At midnight, several Russian media outlets, including state-owned RIA Novosti and the TASS agency, confirmed that explosions about the Moskva cruiser. While the Russian Ministry of Defense did release a statement on the incident, the sources say that the media was the Defense Ministry. That's what I'm saying. It was the defense ministry. So what are we going to do? What are we doing about that? Get rid of one of these. Yeah, okay. Now, according to the IRA, Moscow suffered the detonation from its own ammunition and the crew was completely evacuated. Well, I heard from General McCafferty yesterday that maybe the crew wasn't all evacuated. Maybe they didn't have a chance to get evacuated. It's assumed that the cruiser was hit by a long-range missile. A statement about the weapon was used to fire the missile is not yet available. Well, we know what it was. It was a Neptune missile that they made in Ukraine. And that's why they are so ecstatic about it in Ukraine. Neptune missile were to be delivered to the Ukrainian Armed Forces April 2022. They just got them for coastal missile defense. This has been a problem since the beginning of the war. And then the Russians, if it wasn't a missile from the Ukrainian side of the devastated border, why did they move all their other ships 80 miles more out to sea? Why did they move them? Ukraine got nothing. They said they don't have any ship missiles with capable of something like that. So this is what we're looking at. Another claim by the Ukrainian media was that the TB-2 Bayraktar drones were used to distract the Russian cruiser and launch the anti-ship missiles and when it was busy pursuing the Turkish-made UAV. This claim seems unrealistic as the Moskva had the capability to deal with multiple threats. Why wasn't it able to deal with multiple threats? Are the people on board these ships, is the Russian military that bad? This is their most potent ship. They're saying she was out for maintenance? How you can be out for maintenance in the middle of a war? So it really, it gets worse, they say here. The size of the damage and the current condition of the cruiser is not visibly verified, but the availability, well, they showed the U.S. has camera pictures of it getting hit. So they are going to have, when they start putting those satellite photos out, it's going to be bad. A warship may be abandoned if it is deemed impossible to save the ship and further efforts will be futile. This decision is made by the ship's commanding officer and a crew abandons the ship in life raft. Therefore, the evacuation ship is a clear indication that the ship had begun to sink. It's confirmed that the loss of the Moskva is undoubtedly the most significant casualty of the Russian forces since the beginning of the war. The loss of such ships, significant warships, usually triggers a national trauma in the name of the ship, which stands as Russia, stands for the capital of Russia, intensifies. Psychological effect. The loss of a warship is quite different from that of other assets, as the ships are considered part of the country's mainland. But the name of the role of the Moskva increases Zivin's loss. Okay, the incident also highlights failures of the Russian military intelligence, which didn't detect anti-ship missile capability gained by Ukrainian armed forces in the midst of the war. Despite the earliest loss of the Alligator-class LST, the Russian fleet operated unrestricted in the Black Sea until now. There was no resistance, no threat of warships. The Russians dared the Ukrainian waters, dared the Ukrainians to enter the waters near Odessa. After this incident, Russian warships will be more cautious in the Black Sea area and maintain standoff distance to the Ukraine coast to avoid entering anti-ship anti-missile ship designation areas, which is established by the anti-ship missiles. In addition, while two more cruisers of the same class are still sailing the Eastern Mediterranean using these to reinforce Black Sea Fleet, it's not an option as the Turkish straits are still closed. So, I'm trying to look and see if they have, if they show a designation on here somewhere where they show it. Russia could try to retaliate in the form of a heavy airstrike on Odessa to neutralize Ukraine's ability to attack warships from land, but this is admitting that its flagship was lost to Ukrainian fire. Let's see, update one, Pentagon. That says, Pentagon spokesman John Kirby said the CNN on the warship Moscow is still afloat but clearly damaged. He said it remains unclear whether or not the damage was caused by Ukraine. That was update one. Now, update two, during the towing of the Moscow cruiser to the port destination due to damage of the hull received during the fire, the detonation damage. From the detonation of ammunition, the ship lost stability in the storm at sea. Yeah, it always is a storm at sea, right? Give me a break. The 1700 Black Sea time, and nowhere near stormy with winds at 14 knots. Yes, the height was around 1 meter. So it wasn't a big storm. It wasn't a big storm. They had no idea what hit them. It is just unbelievable. Thermal naval officer who is expert above water warfare, especially in those waters, says he's the best to be decided. He has served in the Turkish Navy for 16 years. He started writing articles. He says here, it's showing Saudi image pinpoints Russian cruiser Moscow as it burns. No, showing it burning. Russian cruiser Moscow will go down in history. The sinking will be studied, and yep, they're showing the ship going down in the ocean. Third sea, mile off Turkish coast. Turkish Ministry of Defense. I'm trying to find out. It says there's a lot of stuff here. They're laying mines in the Black Sea now. The Russians. I mean, can you give me a break? Is this outrageous? Are these clowns outrageous? I mean, it really is bad news. Well, the way we have the Russian military. Oh, and one other thing, our CIA director was over there to meet Putin about within the last 4 months, 5 months, 5 months, maybe more, 6 months, and he told him, we know all about your plan to invade Russia, to invade Ukraine. We know all about everything. So the Russians knew that we were doing this, and they did it anyway. They did it anyway. So what does that tell you? What does that tell you? That's what I don't know. What does that tell you? When they knew that things were going to be as bad as they were, when they knew things would be as bad as they were, that's a problem. They knew that we knew. And your ship just went on. the stuff just went on. They just went on seeing what they had to do. I mean, you know, it's just so impossible sometimes to see why people do certain things and what they're going to get out of it. It's just very difficult. And the difficulty is that we have times, and I have to. Let me turn off this all this noise in the background here. Hold on, just one minute. Come into the house, they're listening to something on the cell phone, then they turn on the TV and they leave the cell phone on. It just blasts out nonsense. Well, now where was I at here? I want to make sure that I have this other one written up here. No, I don't see it. How come? Huh. And I thought I did upload it, but maybe I did not. I thought I did upload it. So I'll do it this way. Let me see how I will do it. Oh, maybe just... No, let's see. Copy that. On here, and I will do it that way. Let's see if this comes up. Anyway, what I was saying that it was almost time for our interview, so I'm going to go over this after our interview with on what about we're doing the as many as the at-large candidates for county commission as possible, and we're going to have Jay Holman, Arthur Griffin is on there. I don't know why I can't. Hold on just a minute. Yes, sir. A voice 646-716-5242. No. I'm sorry. 646. I put this up right. Okay, gotcha. Bye. My mistake. I gave him the wrong number to call into the show. That's why we don't have our guest on. So he'll be calling in any second now. And Arthur Griffin has been almost a foundation in Charlotte for the last 30 years. He's done everything. I remember when he ran for school board, and Arthur Griffin was one of the premier people in this city who wanted children to learn. That's right. It seems quaint that you want children to learn, isn't it? Well, a lot of people just do this just because they think they can and because they have nothing else to do. But that's not the fact with our next guest. As soon as I get his mic up here, come on, Mike, click in. Okay.
Hello?
Arthur Griffin, are you there?
Hello. Yes, Michael, I am here, and thank you so much for having me this afternoon. Thank you very much.
I don't know how I did that. I'm so used to putting my phone number in. I just put that instead of the 646 number. We have known each other since I think the first day you ran for school board. How long ago was that?
I first was on the school board in 1985. I got appointed for school board. I ran for school board in 1986. So that's a little time ago there, Michael. A little time ago. But those were good days.
Good times. And what changes have you seen? Well, as I was trying to tell people before I got on here, people get on these school boards, run for city council, run for county commissioner, and it's because they got nothing else to do most of the time. And, because, you know, this isn't like New York where you're getting paid $136,000 to run to be the county commissioner. I mean, this isn't, I can retire after I do this. No, this is not why you run for school board, and not in Mecklenburg County or in Charlotte or North Carolina. So, what have you seen to change since you got on the school board till today?
Well, I think we've seen sort of like a tsunami of expectations. when I first got on the school board, they were still trying to go through the throes of school desegregation. And there were lots of low expectations of these kids, meaning these African American kids coming into the various schools. And we sort of evolved and worked real hard to try to figure out that all kids can learn and learn at very high levels. But it appears that the pendulum is swinging back the other way, where we're starting to have that same tsunami of low expectations of kids being successful. And it just baffles me, given our history as African Americans who were brutalized for trying to learn how to read and trying to better ourselves, to now have the thinking that we're not interested in education or interested in trying to move forward. That's just baffling to me. But I guess that's the human nature, and certainly we can turn that ship around, Michael, because there are two kinds of leaders, those who wait for change and those who make change happen. And I happen to be ascribing to that last one of making things happen.
Well, you know, the thing that I want to know is when you first got on, we're talking about 1985, 86, 87, 88, were the people who were involved in the school board getting on, they wanted to make change. These people weren't there getting on not to make change. Do you find it different now that people who want to get on now don't want to make, they're just getting on just to have their name out in the community?
Well, I know some of the folk that I've talked to, I can't speak for everybody, but some of the folk I've spoken with have indicated that if poor children aren't doing well in other parts of the country, you know, why should we expect them to do well here in Mecklenburg County?
Yeah.
And I respond to them, Michael, if folk in Waukegan, Illinois, are not interested in trying to eliminate racism, why shouldn't I be interested here in Mecklenburg County? I should be fighting here in Mecklenburg County to get rid of racism. That's almost like sitting back on your laurels and saying, because it's not happening anywhere else, I'm not going to do anything about it here in my backyard. And I think that's the kind of policymakers and leaders that we don't need to have. And I'd be the first to say that.
Did you think that there is more racism now than it was in 1988?
No, I don't think that there's more racism. I think the of the various folks that are in leadership position are such that they don't feel confident that they can make change. I think racism was there in the 80s. I think it's here in 2022. It just takes a different form today by simply saying, I don't believe. We have to believe that our children can learn and learn at very high levels. We have to believe that people don't want to be at the public dole in terms of trying to live like that. I don't think very many people understand what it takes if you are living in poverty in terms of having to apply for various programs, have to go in for recertification. I think the little children that I see each day and the people I talk to, their eyes are bright, they're ready to learn. They want a part of the American dream. Recently, Michael, 60 Minutes did a story on the housing crisis around the country, and there was a little piece on the housing crisis here in Charlotte, North Carolina. But one thing that the CEO indicated on this 60-minute show, and this was just a couple of weeks ago, he had the gall to say, despite the corporations coming in buying houses, he said, well, we're trying to fix it now so that you can rent the American dream. That's the kind of attitude and leadership that I think we have today. Rather than saying Michael Lawson or Arthur Griffin is going to work to have his own piece of the American dream, the system, the institutions now are saying, well, Michael's not going to get it, Arthur's not, but we'll rent it to him. That's not the America that I went to war for in Vietnam. That's not the community that I grew up in, and I was born here in Mecklenburg County, and we've always wanted our children to have their piece of the American dream. You know, Michael, when you talk about then and now, when I was growing up, when you were growing up, there were no placards, there were no signs on the side of the road or in the neighborhood that said, I want to do better. You're going to do better than your parents. That was just ingrained. That was like in the water that we were drinking, that we're going to do better than our parents. Today it's like kids are like saying, well, what does that mean? So we're the adults. We got to show leadership. We have to work with our youngsters. We have to work with the adults that are working with our youngsters also.
Well, you know, and speaking about this, you're absolutely correct. Because when I was growing up, I never even thought about, was I going to do better than my parents? I never even thought about it. Because it seemed to me that they injected that into me, that I was always going to do better.
I need to do this
one more step. You're going to do better.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, I don't understand why.
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Michael, that was in the water. That was in the air that you were breathing.
Right.
You were going to. There was no signs. There was no protest. Right. There were no whatever it was. Okay.
Right.
And you'd hear the stories. My dad could not read or write. And he always complained about the fact that a loaf of bread cost 25 cents because he had come up at a time when it was like a dime for a loaf of bread and stuff. But he always said, you got to get a good education.
Right.
You got to get
a
good education. Because the expectation was if you get a good education, you'd be able to pay a quarter for a loaf of bread. And today, although a loaf of bread costs a lot more than a quarter, we have to prepare our youngsters for the future. 10 years from now, whatever you think is expensive today is going to be that much more expensive. And if you're not able, and this this is a capitalistic system where you are a producer or a consumer, but if you're not able to function in this system, you're not going to be able to have a piece of the American dream. So it's our responsibility, just like our parents' and grandparents' responsibility in terms of making sure that there was a foundation for us to step off of into that new world.
Well, do you think – now, I don't want to get off stuff talking about the school, but do you think that a lot of kids growing up today think that they're just going to go to school, they don't have to really study or anything, that it's just naturally going to rub off on them?
Well, I don't think it's necessarily the schools. It's just like the culture that you're in. If the folk that you're around, the places that you go and that have low expectations, then you'll get that message. They don't have to put it on a billboard or you'll get the message that you really don't have to do anything. You know, we got messages without people saying anything. On Sunday, you have your Sunday church clothes. Mm-hmm. Certain things, certain expectations, you'd wear certain things. I lived in a neighborhood here in Charlotte where traditional stuff. Saturday night, people have fish fries, loud music, maybe drinking adult beverages. I mean, all the kinds of things that you know, were not necessarily the right things to do. But on Sunday morning, you could hear a pin drop on carton.
Pin drop.
Because people knew you could not raise hell on Sunday morning. You had to wait until after 1 o'clock, until after church was out.
Right.
Okay, before you could raise hell. So it's having a culture. So if young people don't adhere to a standard that the adults are creating for them, of course they're not going to live up to them. So as adults, we have to hold high standards. And that's the only way that our youngsters are going to learn.
Well, how are we, if they're not learning that, how do you create, as a county commissioner, better citizens? I shouldn't use the word create. How do you create a different environment for better citizens to grow?
It's called accountable governance. Accountable governance. That's the kind of governance, Michael, where if you have a pre-K program that you're spending county dollars for, and the thinking is that that pre-K program, you're going to be ready for public school, for kindergarten. I'm going to ask people how many of my children that I'm paying for in that government pre-K program are ready for kindergarten, and somebody's going to tell me how many. If we provide pre-K services for 10 youngsters, when they get to kindergarten, I'm going to ask how many of those 10 youngsters were ready for kindergarten. And if they're not ready for kindergarten, I'd like to know why. What is it we need to do better to make sure that those youngsters are successful? Accountable governance. Let me just—it's the same thing we're talking about schools right now.
But don't the people have to be accountable also, so they can have the government account?
Yeah, but I'm saying to you, if I am on the—you asked me if I'm on the county commission, how am I going to do it?
Right.
I'm spending your tax dollars. 75 cents of every dollar we spend at the county comes from people that look like you and me, regular citizens here in Mecklenburg County. So if I'm paying $8 million, $40 million, or $1 for one child that we're sponsoring the county is sponsoring in pre-K, I'm going to ask somebody, is that child ready for kindergarten after a year? And if the child is not, I want to know why. Is it something we're not doing as a system? Is it something that we need to help the parent to do? But why continue that? Michael, that's the same thing with upward mobility. If we have workforce programs in Mecklenburg County that we are sponsoring financially, and Lowe's moves into Charlotte, Honeywell moves into Charlotte, Sentient moves into Charlotte, Atrium has a new medical school. If our workforce graduates are not being hired by those corporations that we've been incentivizing to come into Mecklenburg County, I want to know why. That's what I mean by accountable governance. If we are providing the kinds of incentives to bring Honeywell into Mecklenburg County, then let's figure out if Honeywell will hire our people who've gone through the workforce development programs. And is it Honeywell that's being biased or there's racism, or is it our workforce programs are not producing the kind of potential employees that need to work at Honeywell? That's what accountability. So if we need to do a better job preparing our local citizens for these jobs, then we need to do a better job on our side. If our citizens are well prepared for these jobs coming in, then the question is, why should I provide millions of dollars of incentives to get you here if you're not going to give our local citizens a chance to get those good jobs? That's accountable governance.
That's I understand. No, here's a question. I have, suppose you have, because everything you say, that's the job of you as a county commissioner. But you have some parents that don't think long range with that. They have children, they don't prepare them for school, they might have problems with stuttering or something, and they don't think it's important enough. Oh, he'll learn it when he gets to school. How can we straighten that out where we tell these parents, no, if your child has some sort of physical problem, not mental, but physical, walking, talking, something like that, you need to straighten it out now before they get to K, in pre-K. How do you manage, is that part of the county commission's job to make sure that the citizens are know what the hell is going on?
I think it's all about job. Certainly, mm-hmm. to a degree, we are responsible. In North Carolina, if I'm not mistaken, part of you belong to the state until you're 16 years old. We still have a truancy law in Mecklenburg, in North Carolina. And Mecklenburg County Board of County Commission sits, and it's a consolidated human services board. And what I mean by that is the Mecklenburg County Commission sets your tax, real estate, your property tax rate. It passes a budget, and it responds to the community's priorities. But it also, by statute, is considered the county's consolidated human services board, which is responsible for public health and social services. And one element of the Department of Social Services is our whole child neglect and child abuse, children's services, and family services department.
Mm-hmm.
So in theory, we have a government arm that deals with family services and children's services. And if there is a problem, at least with those people that citizens that are involved with the county through either Medicaid or food stamps or Work First or WIC or whatever it is, I think we have an obligation to help those individual children as well as families position themselves to take advantage of what's happening here in Mecklenburg County in terms of upward mobility.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, but Mecklenburg County, it, as far as the rest of North Carolina, is outstanding. We got things, hey, boy, if it's happening here, you can straighten it out. You got a problem, you can straighten it out. But what happens to the, and I know you're not responsible for the rest of this, of the state, but the rest of the state could be in 1922.
Well, I'll go back to our economic system. Capitalism in terms of producers and consumers. I think it's in our state's interest to make sure we utilize our human talent, our human resources. And if we continue to ignore our human talent and human resources, it's going to cost all of us who live in this state, whether you white or black or green or purple, Republican or Democrat, if we don't cultivate our human capital, it's going to cost you. I mean, jails cost money to build, to operate. The system, the criminal justice system, and it just makes no sense, because as the globe gets smaller, it's no longer Charlotte. It's no longer North Carolina, Michael. We're talking about we're competing globally now. Think about it. The war in Ukraine is causing the cost of a loaf of bread to go up here in America. So we are truly our brother's keeper, and we need to pay attention to that as a nation and as a country. I mean, I grew up here pledging allegiance to the flag every morning in a segregated school system right here in Charlotte, North Carolina. And the last word says, with liberty and justice for all. That is important no matter where you live in North Carolina. You want to make North Carolina stronger, and whatever we can do here in Mecklenburg County to contribute to that, I'm all for it.
You know, we talked about a lot about the schools, how the schools operate, how so people should have their children, what the children should do and everything. But you're going to be on the county commission. What other things in your responsibility you see that not other things, two other things that you believe that need help that you think you can provide as the next county commissioner?
Well, as I said to you earlier, one of the hats that the county commission wears is the Consolidated Human Services Board, responsible for public health and for social services. As you get older, Michael, you start realizing that you're not as invincible as you were when you were 25 years old, and that immortality becomes a little realistic in terms of your health.
As a
cancer survivor, I'm really concerned about access to quality health care for all of our citizens here in Mecklenburg County. And when you look at some of the statistics here in Mecklenburg County, I was amazed to find out that African Americans were disproportionately dying prematurely. I mean, dying prematurely is defined by deaths prior to age 65. And, you know, African Americans, you know, seem to have this propensity to always lead in some of the not so good social determinants. But to die prematurely, we leading that pack in Mecklenburg County? I mean, we're depriving our grandchildren and our children. If you die before age 65, you're not going to be able to spend that time with your families. That's human resources, again, that we are wasting. In addition to that, Mike, you can't even qualify today for Social Security, so you're leaving money on the table. And there are four chronic diseases, strokes, diabetes, heart disease, and cancer. And we lead the pack in those areas. And one of the things I would do, being on the Board of County Commission, is put my public health hat on and utilize some of the resources we have to target those census tracts where there's a prevalence of any of those four chronic diseases. Give you an example. Growing up in Charlotte, there was a lady named Allegra Westbrook. She used to run the Colored Library over on Brevard Street. And what Ms. Westbrook would do is during the summer, you know, kids who could actually get to the library, they'd get their books and go home and get their little stuff. But kids who couldn't get to the library on Second Street, because that's the only colored library in all of Mecklenburg County, she got on an old school bus and drove out to areas where the African-American communities were to make sure those kids had access to school
buses. Is that right?
Well, think about health the same way. We have some of the most sophisticated mobile health units you'd find anywhere in the world right here in Mecklenburg County. Why couldn't we bring those mobile health units to those census tracts where we already know where there's a high prevalence of cancer or diabetes or heart disease and start wellness checks with people with regard to those conditions? In addition to those, Michael, hire community health workers. There's an African-American woman that people are celebrating now. Her name is Sadie Smith. She was one of the first African-American public health workers supervisor in Mecklenburg County. And her role was making sure that the health department would get out into those communities to provide education and prevention services to reduce the prevalence of those chronic diseases. We're now, that was all manual back then when Sadie Smith was a public health nurse. Right now we have the technology. It's something called the geo-informational system called GIS. We can target every person who has one of those chronic diseases in every census tract. We also, with the GIS system, Michael, we know where every barbershop, every beauty shop, every church, every daycare center, everywhere a human being would possibly have to go. And we could target those institutions with community health workers, with placards, with signs, with information and education to immediately start reducing the numbers of folk with those chronic diseases in those census tracts. That's where I come back to this thing called accountable governance. It wouldn't be this, we're just doing something, but we will identify a number. If there's 1,000 people with heart diseases in census tract 22, after 12 months or 18 months, do we have 900 people with that condition, or 900 people who actively be getting treatment? That's what I would do as a county commissioner in the area of trying to make sure that the access to quality health care was available. In addition to that, whenever there's a bond referendum for capital needs, and we build schools or we build public buildings all the time, fire departments, police stations, we build those all the time, why not build a community resource center or a health center closer to where the populations are? Because right now, getting on a bus to go somewhere and you have to make a transfer once or twice to get a wellness check may discourage people from going to get a wellness check to find out if in fact they have one of the chronic diseases. So if we could try to figure out how to get services, life-saving services, closer to the people, that's something that I'd like to try to do.
Well, isn't that going to cost money?
Well, it costs money today. The services that are being provided for folk and during the emergency rooms and critical care, it's going to cost you far more money than preventive care.
Mm-hmm. Right.
What you just said.
Oh, no, I know what you're just saying. Go ahead.
Yeah, the Community Resource Center is not just for health. The Community Resource Center is also for those kids you mentioned earlier that may have a speech impediment or some other issue.
Right.
So it's not just singularly. That's where the account – you have to have folk who strategically can look at issues and figure out the most effective and efficient way of accomplishing those. And there is a finite amount of money. I mean,
Not getting into the weeds, but how which are we going over the line and going into not county commissions, but you're the county. So how where does the city and the county separate when we're talking about something like this?
The city is for hard services and the county is for soft services. That's the best way I can put it, Michael. The city does sidewalks and street lights, police and fire and airports and the hard stuff. The county does, as I said, the soft stuff, the social services, the Medicaid, the food stamps. The parks and recs and the various.
But don't they have don't they have that at city hospitals? What's the name of the city hospital here in Charlotte? Is what CMS? Not CMS. So what's the city hospital?
The school district in Charlotte. Yeah, Charlotte Mecklenburg Schools.
The city hospital is what?
Oh, the hospital.
Yeah.
You said the hospital. It's called Atrium.
Yeah.
It used to be Charlotte Memorial Hospital.
Right.
Went to Carolina Medical Center, and now it's Atrium. But there are two
Atrium
major
is,
hospitals.
Right. Atrium there and Novant. Right.
Yeah, there are two. Yeah, Atrium and Novant certainly represents the professional healthcare system here in Mecklenburg County. But Mecklenburg County also has a program called, I think it's called One Health Alliance. And One Health Alliance, we are in partnership. Mecklenburg County government is in partnership with Atrium and partnership with Novant and through the health department. Mecklenburg County's health department is responsible for the community's health, public health here in Mecklenburg County. So in partnership with Novant, in partnership with Atrium, I think we clearly could address some of those chronic illnesses to reduce premature deaths. It's not the county by itself, but in partnership.
Myself, right.
Yeah.
Well, but how do people understand? How do people get to know that this is a fact, this is what they can do?
Well, we don't have that strategy in place just yet. I'm not on the county commission just yet, so we don't have that operating. But let's just say that I'm not on the county commission. Something that the county can do anyway. We provide services to several hundred thousand Medicaid recipients in Mecklenburg County. Mm-hmm. Why can't you put little informational things about chronic diseases in our communications to those couple hundred thousand people who are on Medicaid or on food stamps or on Work First or WIC? I mean, they're already interacting with the system, so to speak, because they have to come somewhere to become certified to get those benefits.
Right.
Let's start education day one as they enter the system, as they're using those public benefits.
Well, that's a great idea. But the thing is, people sometimes seem to be more afraid of putting their name in the hat. They want to be, I don't want to be recognized. I'm sick, but I don't want them to know I'm sick. I mean, what do you do with people like that? How can you get through to them?
Well, some people, it's going to take a little bit more effort than just presenting yourself and presenting the opportunity. And to the extent that we have some resources to apply to those folk, we'll just keep working at it because we don't have a whole lot of other choices if, in fact, you want to reduce premature deaths here in Mecklenburg County. I think most people, most reasonable citizens, would want to do that. Something that Michael, that's another factor that comes into play. I said as we get older, we sometimes think about our health and our mortality. Mecklenburg yeah. County is a lot of young people are moving into Mecklenburg County, but a lot of grandparents are also moving into Mecklenburg County to be closer to their grandchildren. So we do have an increasing population of people 55 years of age and older coming into Mecklenburg County. And if I'm not mistaken, a lot of those 55-year-old plus residents moving into Mecklenburg County, I think, are a little bit more amenable to quality health care services. So I think we can start on both ends with the youngsters who are receiving prenatal care and then early infant care because they're coming to our services. They're coming to Atrium. They're going to Novant. They're going to the Mecklenburg County Health Department for their immunization shots and treatments, et cetera. So we have an opportunity to improve those services to the point where we can start following those all the way up to senior citizens.
Now, is the county, what is the job?
Of the county commissioner?
Job of the county commissioner. Right. What's the job?
There are three basic, well, two basic things. The county commission in every county in North Carolina is primarily responsible for setting the tax rate for your property. In addition to that, the statute requires the county to pass an annual budget, and then third, to work on whatever the community's priorities are. The other hats that Mecklenburg County has, there are some counties that do not wear this other hat, but the other hat that Mecklenburg County commissioners wear as a Consolidated Human Services Board, they are responsible for your public health. And what I mean by public health, to make sure that various diseases, when COVID occurred, that came specifically under the Mecklenburg County Board of County Commission because they sit as the Board of Health, the Public Health Board. Mm-hmm. And they try to make sure that we are responsive to any types of threats to the public's health here in Mecklenburg County. If there was an outbreak of hepatitis A, if there's something happened at some restaurant or somebody didn't wash their hands or whatever it is, that is a responsibility of the Mecklenburg County Board of County Commissioners because they wear the hat as being the Public Health Commission here in Mecklenburg County.
You set the standard. I'm not cutting you off, but when you become the county commissioner, because you will be, your job would be to tell the people, keep your mask on for 5 more months or 5 more days.
That is exactly what happened when COVID struck. As you can recall, through Gibby Harris and now our current public health director, they will provide recommendations to the county commission, and the county commission will either vote those recommendations up or down because the county commission now wears the hat as the public health commission here in Mecklenburg County. Prior to 2012 or 2010, I can't remember the exact date now, there used to be a separate public health commission, a separate Mecklenburg County Board of Social Services, and then the Mecklenburg County Board of County Commission. But around 2012, special legislation was granted, and the Mecklenburg County Board of County Commission took on the role, those other two roles, of public health and Board of Social Services. In fact, I used to serve on the Mecklenburg County Board of Social Services. Before me, you probably remember Jim Richardson that was here in this community. Jim Richardson served on the Mecklenburg County Board of Social Services.
Mm-hmm.
And he went on to serve at the state level as well as a county commissioner and a state senator. But that it used to be separate, but now it's all under the Mecklenburg County Board of County Commission.
Now, the Mecklenburg County Board of County Commission, do they have, I mean, they're not doctors, so how are they getting advice that, hey, you got to keep a mask on because you could get sick from this, if you have, especially if you haven't got any shots yet?
We have hired, and prior to this young man, Raynard Washington, Gibby Harris was our health director under the Mecklenburg County Board of County Commissioners. Gibby retired in December, and a very talented young African-American doctor, Dr. Raynard Washington, is now our director of health services under the Board of County Commissioners. So we look to, he is a doctor in epidemiology. He's an epidemiologist and certainly is well-trained and well-versed in various diseases. And so he will share his expertise with the members of the Board of the County Commission and provide various advice. In fact, it was Dr. Washington's report to the Mecklenburg County Board of County Commissioners that it was time to drop the mask mandate. And when he made that recommendation to the Board of County Commissioners, he presented various data and facts to support that recommendation, and the Mecklenburg County Board of County Commission adopted that recommendation, as you so well know. And after 10 days from that vote, the mask mandate in Mecklenburg County was lifted, although he recommended that people should voluntarily, in certain situations, continue to wear their masks. But the county will take advice from the train, because I'm not aware of anybody on the county commission being a medical doctor. And so they don't necessarily have that expertise, as you so well pointed out, to give advice and direction. So we have to get that information from those people who are trained.
Well, my wife is retired. She worked in the medical field for 35 years in New York and here and also VA. And she's been giving out shots since this COVID epidemic started. Matter of fact, she just came in a little while ago. But she said that it would drop it off, but now it seems like more people are coming in and get more shots. So some people got the word that, hey, maybe this thing ain't over with yet.
Well, I don't know. As you kindly pointed out, we're certainly not medical experts sitting up there, but what I'm reading is that the city of Philadelphia has instituted mask mandate. Several other people are considering that at this particular point because there seems to be another wave, so to speak. I would absolutely be relying on the medical experts, the folk who do this stuff for a living, to provide the kind of advice, and I will certainly take their advice to heart.
Well, I know. I feel like I've been shutting it for 2 years. I missed two birthdays already because I've been inside the house. The thing is, I got another birthday coming up, the 23rd of April. And, you know, I said, well, maybe I can just have something in my house or something. My wife, she's so, hey, boy, you look like you're sick, boy. You're going to the other room.
No, we left last December and went out to Los Angeles to take my grandkids out to UCLA and USC. And everywhere you would go, you had to show your vaccination card, your ID.
Good.
Everything had to be current. You had to wear a mask wherever you would go. Everything.
Why don't we ask for that? Why is that so seem to be, oh, that's taboo, you can't ask for a vaccination card? I mean, why is that?
Well, they did ask for that in L.A. Okay.
Right, but they didn't ask for it a lot of places.
Well, the establishments asked for that.
Ah.
So if you went into a restaurant or a McDonald's or anywhere to sit down to eat before they'd let you in, they said, "Can I see your valid ID and can I see your vaccination records?"
Well, that,
now
I
there were other places you could go, but if you're going to go inside and be in proximity to others, they wanted mm-hmm. to see your valid driver's license or ID card and your immunization record.
Well, not giving away anything, if you're a county commissioner and this question came up, would you think it would be out of place?
If the medical experts share with me mm-hmm. that, you know, these,
right.
well, here's the 1, 2, 3, 4 reasons for doing it. Here's the 1, 2 risks that would occur if we did not do it. I would certainly weigh their advice and respond accordingly. But I'd certainly yield to the medical science to a great degree. But the Lord did give me a little bit of common sense. So I try to put that in that equation also.
Well, see, hey, listen, you're the first county commissioner, matter of fact, the first anybody that I've heard say that the Lord did give me a little common sense.
Right, right. Well, that's just who I am, Michael. You know me because what you see is what you get.
What do you think is the we already talked about it, the major thing that you want to see accomplished when you become county commissioner?
Well, the major thing I want to accomplish is make upward mobility a reality rather than a political slogan. I mean, you've been around. You've heard upward mobility
yep.
for decades now.
Oh, yeah.
Upward mobility. And
right.
everybody got all in a tizzy when the researcher from Harvard said we were 50th out of 50 and you got all these programs and stuff. That's really what's critical because, as I said to you earlier, my dad, who could not read or write, was always talking about a loaf of bread cost 25 cents. But he had the common sense, what I just said a minute ago, he had the common sense to know that you had to get a good education, whether formal or informal, to be able to buy a 25-cent loaf of bread or more, whatever
right.
it costs in the future. So we have to prepare our youngsters to take advantage of these jobs here in Mecklenburg County. You've probably heard something called we have an affordable housing crisis. In,
right.
in Mecklenburg County, right now, we reach out to – we in-migrate a lot of our workforce because we aren't preparing our local folk and young people to get these jobs. So what I mean by that, when a Honeywell comes to town with 500 jobs, do we have 100 people, 200 people, if there are 200 vacancies, if ready to,
mm-hmm.
to apply for those jobs? If not, we're mm-hmm. going to go to Milwaukee, we're going to go to San Francisco and bring people into
right.
Mecklenburg County who are going to take those jobs. Well, supply and demand in terms of housing, Michael, if you don't have a great supply of houses right now and a heavy demand of people coming into Charlotte to get these jobs, it's going to automatically make the price of an apartment go up. It's going to automatically make the price of a house go up. And so you got a double whammy going on. The folk who are not being trained can't get the jobs. People coming in from out of town are getting the jobs and making the cost of living going up as far as a home or apartment. And so the people who are here can't get the good jobs. and can't afford to stay here because the rent keep going up. So upward mobility is really a critical piece for me, something that really I'm going to work my tail off if I get in there to try to make that a reality rather than just a political slogan, because we absolutely have the raw material here in terms of our kids being born in this county. We just need to utilize the assets here. One of the biggest assets we have in Mecklenburg County is called Central Piedmont Community College. It's a community college. It's a workforce oasis. They can train you in welding and automotive technology, IT. They call it advanced manufacturing today. There's a lot of programs there, but I don't think we're using it to its fullest capacity. And I would try to do everything I can do for those youngsters or adults who want to maybe move up in a particular area to make sure that those programs are accessible so that people can get a better job if they want to move up, or people who are unemployed can get a job with a living wage. There are jobs now that you don't have to go to school for 4 years in a traditional college or university, but you absolutely have to have some additional training after high school. And that could be a sonogrammer, could be a lab tech. To work on these brand new cars today, you got to know about these mini computers and math and reading. I mean, you can't work on a Tesla. You can't work on a Tesla or a brand new Mercedes or BMW unless you know what you're doing under that hood today. But we can train folks at Central Piedmont, Michael. But we're not using that facility as well as we should be using that facility, as well as other workforce programs in the community.
Well, I need to know, how can people get in touch with you to help you with your campaign?
Well, my website certainly is www.griffin4mecklenburgcounty.com. That's GRIFFIN, 4, MecklenburgCounty.com. That gets
and any numbers? And when are you having any fundraisers? Or are you doing anything like that for people to come out and see you?
Well, we're going to have a fun event that's coming up on April the 28th. Now, I grew up here in Charlotte, and I went to Second Ward. And the two high schools here in Charlotte was Second Ward and West Charlotte. And we're going to have a pep rally and a fundraiser for Arthur Griffin. And it's Second Ward versus Second Ward and West Charlotte. We always had the big Queen City Classic here. So alumni and friends and families from Second Ward and alumni friends and family from West Charlotte are going to meet at the Club Nile on April the 28th of this year for a fundraiser. And if you go to my website, and that's griffin4mecklenburgcounty.com, that information will be there. Or if you just dial the campaign office at 980-285-3148, and you can get information about a really fun event because it's bringing out the old alumni from both Second Ward and West Charlotte for a fun event and also to help me get elected to Mecklenburg County Board of County Commission.
Well, I think that's fabulous. And you have been I don't think any other county commission, but any other person that I have interviewed for office has given us such detail in what the heck they want to do. As I was saying when we first started, so many people just want to get in there just to get in there because they don't have a job. And they ain't had a job in a couple of years. But, hey, listen, you know what you want to do. And this is what we need. Because if you don't know what the heck you want to do, why the heck do you want to do it? I mean, you step, you take your left foot forward, then you take your right foot forward, not because you want to move it, because you want to go someplace. So
well,
I want to thank you for giving us this great, great informational package today that you gave us. And I don't know if there's anything else you want to say before we leave.
I just want to thank you for giving me the opportunity to share with you and your listeners. As I said when I first started, I'll end with that. There are two kinds of leaders, those who wait for change or those who make change happen. I'm on the latter.
That's right.
I want to make change happen. So thank you, Michael, so much, and really appreciate the opportunity.
I want to thank you, and you can come on any time. When is the first day of voting?
Early voting starts in Mecklenburg County, April the 28th. That's the last Thursday in April, and goes to May 14th. So it's April 28th to May 14th is early voting, and then that following Tuesday on May the 17th is the actual primary election date.
Okay.
Please come out and vote.
I want you to vote for me,
but please go out and vote.
Vote for Arthur Griffin, everybody. You heard him. Can't get anybody brighter who understands what the heck is going on in this county than Arthur Griffin. I want to thank you, Arthur. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you, sir. Thank you. Good evening. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, everybody. That's the end of the show. And, boy, you know, time went by fast when you're having fun. Everybody have a great holiday weekend. Have a great Easter. Goodbye.
There's no business like show business, like no business I know. Everything about it is appealing. Everything the traffic will allow. Could you get that happy feeling when you are stealing that extra bow? There's no people like show people. They smile when they are low. Yesterday they told you you would not go far. That night you open and there you are. Next day on your dressing room they hung a star. And go. Costumes, the scenery, the makeup, the props, the audience that lifts you when you're down. The headaches, the heartaches, the backaches, the flops, the sheriff who escorts you out of town. The opening when your heart beats like a drum. The closing when the customers don't come. Word before the show has started that your favorite uncle died at dawn. And top of that, your grandma has parted. You're broken-hearted, but you go on. There's no people like show people. They smile when they are low. Even with a turkey that you know.